Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 18th of August 2026. My name's Simon, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers and news websites, chosen and read by Bridget Doole and my good self. As always, copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. And before we start, here's a reminder of how to listen to Oxtalk on your Alexa device. And at the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Oxtalk online.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
Crowds of people came out to parks and open spaces in Oxfordshire to view a once-in-a-lifetime partial solar eclipse. The rare event stunned viewers who turned out in droves to gaze up at the sky at the moment the moon passed between the Earth and the Sun between about 6:15 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. on Wednesday the 12th of August. South Park in Oxford turned into a full circus, according to one Oxford Mail reporter on the scene, Alexandra Carter, who saw everything from jugglers and music to last-minute hustlers selling special solar eclipse glasses. She said, "It's jam-packed here, hundreds of people. It's a full circus with jugglers, grass volleyball and all sorts of kits, homemade makeshift mini-projector kits and colanders. The show's about to begin with the sky slowly getting darker and the temperature starting to drop, with a view of Oxford's finest spires in the background in South Park. A smart businessman has come to the rescue of many, including me, selling special ISO eclipse glasses for £5, surprisingly made at Eclipse Wholesale, based in Oxford. Safety standard solar viewing glasses became as rare as gold dust in the days leading up to the special event, as they sold out online and in most local shops in the lead-up. Makeshift ways of viewing shadow cast by the moon included creating a pinhole camera out of a cereal box and foil, using a colander to cast dozens of mini moon shadows on the ground, or attempting to view it through a camera. One Oxford resident, Kirsten Smythe, came up with her own ingenious solution for watching the event without glasses, using a welder's mask. She said, "The mask absolutely worked. We watched the eclipse through the lens of the welder and it did the job perfectly. My eyes feel exactly the same as they did beforehand, with absolutely no effect." Dozens of people gathered at Quarry Rec in Headington, where Science Oxford hosted an Eclipse in the Park event. Included glasses being handed out, food and entertainment, children's storytelling, and a visit from Lord Mayor of Oxford, Chiwe Mongongowe. Katrina Lawrence, a STEM technician at UTC Oxfordshire, organised an event at the school in Harwell near Didcot, where she gave out glasses and enjoyed the spectacle in what District and County Councillor Ian Snowden described as a fantastic community evening. Ms Lawrence said, The event was extremely well attended. We quickly ran out of the 200 pairs of glasses I'd purchased, but lots of people shared with groups that weren't able to get a pair. And we had a lot of people using pinhole projectors and other creative ways of viewing. I'm immensely proud of the event. It was a great community event for Didcot. Mr. Snowden added, "It was brilliant to see so many families, friends and neighbours coming together and enjoying the spectacle."
A landfill fire near Didcot has prompted renewed concerns about the impact of heat waves and drought conditions after firefighters battled a major blaze over the weekend of the 8th and the 9th of August. Ian Snowden, Oxfordshire County Councillor for Didcot West, said there was no doubt that prolonged heat waves, drought and exceptionally dry vegetation increase the risk of fires spreading and make incidents more difficult for firefighters to tackle. His comments came after a fire broke out at the Greenways landfill site at Appleford Sidings, Sutton Courtenay, on Sunday evening, the 9th of August, triggering a major emergency response. Mr. Snowden said, "There is no doubt that prolonged heat waves, drought and exceptionally dry vegetation increase the risk of fires spreading and make them more difficult for firefighters to tackle. While stressing that the cause of the fire should not be speculated on before investigations are complete, he said the increasing frequency of fires at waste sites was concerning. The councillor also pointed to warnings from the National Fire Chiefs Council, NFCC, about changing waste streams, including the growing presence of lithium-ion batteries. He said it has warned that safety standards haven't kept pace with modern waste streams, particularly the huge increase in lithium-ion batteries. Calling for regulations to keep pace with modern risks, he added that waste sites should be regulated for the waste we produce today, not the waste of 30 years ago. Mr. Snowden also thanked firefighters for their efforts in difficult conditions and said, "Local residents have lived alongside this site for decades and deserve confidence that every possible measure is being taken to protect them." The incident was reported to Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue at 5:43 p.m. on Sunday, the 9th of August, with witnesses seeing thick black smoke billowing from the site and visible for miles around. 8 fire crews attended, supported by a high-volume pump, 4x4 vehicles and a water carrier. Royal Berkshire Fire and Rescue Service also deployed a multi-terrain water carrier to assist. In an update on Monday morning, Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service said the blaze involved a large volume of non-hazardous processed landfill and waste material. The fire was brought under control, with crews remaining on site overnight and into Monday the 10th of August, while working alongside site operators and managers. The cause is not believed to be suspicious, although further investigations will take place. Advice issued on Sunday the 9th of August for nearby residents to keep doors and windows closed has since been lifted.
Firefighters face physical and mental exhaustion as they are forced to tackle unprecedented and relentless blazes during the hottest summer on record. This summer, the county has seen devastating fires at farms, a school, landfill site, and forest, while under drought conditions and experiencing record-breaking heat. Lee Newport, acting chair of the Oxfordshire Fire Brigade Union based at Didcot Fire Station, said staff were burned out and has called for support, describing this summer as a crisis point. He said, "I cannot emphasise enough how busy it has been in Oxfordshire. We are at a crisis point now in this country." Mr. Newport said he had never experienced anything like this summer's blazes in his 22 years in the fire service, saying, "This is unprecedented." He described going to a call out, coming back and servicing kit only to be called out again, saying the fires are relentless, citing Goring Heath, Blueberry Farm, Greenway's landfill blazes as just some of those that the crews have been seen called out to from his station. The union is calling for government funding for wildfire-specific protective equipment and gear. Mr. Newport explained the kit that firefighters are using now is not designed for the continuous nature of wildfire and field blazes. He said, "We just need support. It is physically and mentally exhausting." The General Secretary of the Union, Steve Wright, has also served across Oxfordshire. He has been speaking out on the situation, which he is calling a national emergency, and has received government confirmation that there will be a national wildfire summit. Mr. Wright explained how fire services have had to pool resources, saying 5,000 more firefighters are needed. Last month, Oxfordshire fire crews were sent to Suffolk to help with a major wildfire incident there. Previously, a spokesperson for Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service said, "We have crews and resources in place to provide emergency response across Oxfordshire." Oxfordshire East MP Annalisa Dodds, Labour, said, "This spring and summer's sustained record-breaking hot temperatures have only underlined how the climate crisis is already affecting us here in the UK. Our brave firefighters and other emergency workers have been at the sharp end of trying to protect people from the very worst impact." She said she will continue to push for action. Green County Councillors Robin Jones and James Barlow wrote to the Oxfordshire Fire Chief Officer and his deputies, thanking them and their crews for their exceptional help given to the many people struggling with the frightening impacts of the recent extreme heat and drought. In a letter, they described fear for the priority calls which have had to be made during the blazes. Mr. Jones said, "We felt we needed to acknowledge the strain and risks that our dedicated and fire and rescue services face on a regular basis now due to the increasing impacts of climate change."
Oxfordshire now leads the UK on clean air, claims a key figure at Climate Emergency UK, the organisation that monitors council's climate progress. Isaac Beaver said that while clean air and a decarbonised transport system had traditionally been seen as the realm of London and Labour, Lib Dem-led Oxford County Council is now leading the UK on clean air initiatives. He cites Britain's first zero emission zone in conjunction with Labour's Oxford City Council, electric buses, and the introduction of school streets and low-traffic neighbourhoods, none of which have been repealed, despite being delivered against the background of a vocal minority and, quote, conspiracy theory-laden social media, unquote. He adds, "The response of the national government and all of the regional mayors who have failed to take any decisive action in the past 3 years to clean up our air and decarbonise our transport pale in comparison to Oxfordshire. And it's all with the backing of local people. Both the Liberal Democrats and Greens elected their highest number of councillors in the 2025 local elections, while independent candidates who campaigned against the initiatives failed to cut through." In a parting shot, he urges UK councils to follow Oxfordshire's lead with zero emission delivery zones, workplace parking levies, increasing and expanding parking controls to dissuade shorter car trips, and recognising that the street is a public space, not a private car park.
Plans for one of the largest data centres in the UK, near the M40, have been approved despite concerns over energy demands, water use and biodiversity impacts. Chorwell District Council granted the reserved matters approval for the scheme at Graven Hill near Bicester on August the 6th. The development will see an over 100,000 square metre data centre campus built on former MOD land south of Graven Hill and St David's Barracks in Ambrosden. A major new substation is planned on the western side of the site, complementing an existing substation already built nearby. Planning officers said that this would provide the site's electricity power needs without compromising electricity supplies elsewhere in the Bicester area. According to the applicant's economic assessment, the project would create between 1,500 and 2,000 construction jobs and between 500 and 800 permanent full-time equivalent roles once operational. The application attracted a myriad of objections from residents and community groups. A key issue is whether the development should be considered a B8 storage and distribution use, as approved at outline stage, or a sui generis data centre requiring a fresh planning application. Water consumption was another major concern, particularly following recent dry weather and hosepipe restrictions. The applicant said the facilities would use a sealed, closed-loop cooling system, meaning water would circulate internally rather than be consumed through cooling processes. A planning condition requires that this system should remain in place permanently. Ecology officers also raised concerns over the loss of 142 trees, including four high-value Category A specimens, and the impact on species including bats, birds, great crested newts and badgers. To mitigate this, the scheme will retain boundary woodland, plant 344 new trees, create new habitats, install bat and bird boxes, provide a bat barn, and introduce protection for badgers and newts.
Thames Water has sparked outrage after handing a delayed £1 million golden handshake to its chief financial officer and agreeing controversial retention payments to top bosses as it battles to secure its financial future. The stricken supplier, which is sinking under a debt pile of more than £20 billion, disclosed in a letter to the Environmental, Food and Rural Affairs Committee that it had made the so-called signing on payment to Steve Buck at the end of July from an emergency lending facility from creditors. In the letter sent to Committee Chairman Alistair Carmichael, Thames Water Chairman Sir Adrian Montague said the payment was a necessary incentive to Mr. Buck for joining the utility when he was appointed in April 2025, but that it had been deferred when wider retention payments were put on hold. It is understood the payment was made after legal advice. Thames Water also said in the letter that it had agreed individual settlements of what it calls retention payments for a dozen top bosses, plus two who have now left the business, despite a furore late last year over them. Details of the payments have emerged as Thames Water is fighting to secure a rescue deal proposed by its senior creditors to avoid collapse and being placed in temporary nationalisation by the government. The payouts also add to growing evidence that the sector is able to sidestep last year's Water Special Measures Act, banning performance-related bonuses for bosses at utilities, failing customers and the environment. The Prime Minister's official spokesman said, "It's unacceptable that one of the worst performing water companies is handing out huge payments to its executives when it should be focusing on improving performance and rebuilding public trust. We've banned bonuses for polluting water bosses. We expect companies to follow both the letter and the spirit of the rules. We look forward to the outcome of Ofwat's review, which will assess if and how these rules should be strengthened." Mr. Carmichael, MP and EFRA committee chairman, urged the government to outline plans to prevent firms making payments that evade the bonus ban. He said, "The government were clear in the early days that they wanted this to stop. It is obvious that they have not succeeded in this. We need to hear now from them about what they intend to do about it. Thames Water agreed last December, amid an outcry, to pause £2.46 million of retention payments to 21 top bosses, having already paid out a similar amount earlier in 2025. Thames Water declined to comment further on the payments detailed in the letter and has not disclosed how much it has agreed to pay. But it is understood that the payouts are less than originally proposed, which it had been due to make last December and in June this year.
New research shows that 89% of people back the proposed White Horse Reservoir near Abingdon to help with future water shortages. Thames Water, Affinity Water and Southern Water customers would benefit from the reservoir. Thames Water predicts a daily shortfall of 1 billion litres by 2050 without urgent action. The reservoir, if approved, could be operational by 2040, providing water to about 15 million people. Despite public support and the ongoing heat waves, the UK has not constructed a new reservoir in over 30 years. July was the sunniest, hottest and driest month since records began, with temperatures reaching 35 degrees centigrade in May, June and July for the first time. Leonie Dubois, Thames Water's delivery director, said, "This summer has served as a stark reminder of the extremely hot and dry weather that is set to become our new norm. It's therefore vital that we're able to store more water, and White Horse Reservoir's role in future water supply is of national critical importance. It's incredibly encouraging to see people backing our plans and wanting to see the reservoir become reality." But in a statement, Action Group Against Reservoir Development called the reservoir the wrong solution in the wrong place. "The massive reservoir, which will cover an area the size of Gatwick Airport, has always been a topic of debate. Only Kielder Water in Northumberland, at 200 billion litres, is bigger. Two groups, Countryside Charity CPRE Oxfordshire and Safer Waters, even sought a judicial review at the High Court. However, their judicial review was dismissed. Thames Water revealed that costs for the controversial proposed Abingdon Reservoir soared from £2.2 billion to £5.5 billion and £7.5 billion, a tripling of the original figure. Oxfordshire MPs have also raised concerns about the estimated cost of building the reservoir. Liberal Democrats Ollie Glover, Leila Moran and Charlie Maynard argue that the rising price tag significantly undermines the business case and risks leaving bill payers liable. Current plans are for the reservoir to be delivered by Thames Water to supply water in the south-east, but not to Oxfordshire. This is the second attempt at building the mega reservoir after an attempt under Conservative government failed following a public inquiry in 2010. Thames Water previously said it welcomes the government's plan to improve infrastructure across the region.
In an attempt to clean up water quality at the Wolvercote Mill Stream bathing spot, £4 million of ultraviolet treating equipment has been installed at Cassington Sewage Works. Thames Water says Cassington STW has the potential to impact the bathing water, but is not the only contributing factor. Since May, the ultraviolet treatment has neutralised bacteria and other pathogens before treated wastewater is returned to the environment. Wolvercote Mill Stream was designated as a bathing spot in 2022. Since when it has been consistently classified as poor quality. Thames Water believes that agriculture and urban runoff, which can be difficult to identify and capture through routine monitoring, also contribute to pollution. it says it will continue to monitor levels during the 2026 bathing season.
A care home has been helping residents beat the heat with a wheelchair-friendly car wash experience. Elmbrook Court in Wantage set up a wheelchair wash for its residents as temperatures climbed. The wheelchair wash includes a rainbow wash water arch, a gentle rinse for residents, and a quick wheel scrub, all set to the sound of Rolls-Royce's Car Wash. Sharon Ockley, Lifestyles Manager at Elmbrook Court, said, "Water's so refreshing and we wanted to make it accessible for everyone. We could have just given them spray bottles, but we made it a bit more fun with some music and their wheelchairs get a quick spruce with a toilet brush. Brand new ones. The water spray is very light, so it doesn't use very much as we're conscious there's a hosepipe ban. It's just enough to be refreshing and the residents have loved it." Philip Peacock said, "It's been wonderful fun. I'd love it if they could clean my wheelchair like this every week. The water feels lovely and it keeps you cool for a little while till you dry off." To help beat the heat, staff have also introduced a daily ice cream round and ensure that residents have plenty of drinks. Time spent outside is limited to keep residents out of the strong sun, and people who are cared for in their rooms have fans, and staff give them cooling flannels and face washes. Elmbrook Court, located on Grove Road, is a purpose-built facility offering residential, nursing, memory and respite care for 74 residents.
Oxford City Council is urging visitors to keep Port Meadow and other green spaces free of litter after cows died from eating discarded rubbish. Visitors are being reminded to use the bins provided or take their rubbish home, as littering poses serious risks to both the environment and wildlife. In recent years, two cows, including a seven-month-old calf, died after consuming rubbish left in the meadow, including plastic bags and balloons. Anna Railton, Cabinet Member for Planning and Zero Carbon Oxford, said, "We want everyone to enjoy Oxford's parks and green spaces. Unfortunately, a small minority of people leave litter behind, which spoils these beautiful spaces for everyone else. Litter is more than just an eyesore. It can seriously harm wildlife, grazing animals and pets, while broken glass and other waste can pose risks to visitors." Port Meadow, described as one of Oxford's most treasured open spaces, attracts thousands of visitors throughout the year. Litter left behind has also injured grazing cattle and horses, and ODS staff have had to rescue swans entangled in rubbish. The council reminded the public that dropping litter is an offence, with fines of £150 for those caught.
The familiar green quads of Oxford University's colleges have been turned brown amid successive heat waves and a hosepipe ban in the county. At Christchurch, the normally verdant lawns are looking dry and straw-coloured. This reflects the conditions seen across much of the county after a prolonged spell of hot and dry weather. The parched appearance comes as Thames Water's temporary hosepipe ban remains in force across its supply area, including Oxfordshire. The restrictions began at midnight on Thursday, July the 23rd, and will remain in place until further notice. They were introduced after an exceptionally dry spring, three official heat waves by that time, and sustained high demand for water. Under the ban, Thames Water customers must not use hose pipes, sprinklers, or pressure washers to water gardens, lawns, and allotments. They are also prohibited from using them to wash private vehicles, clean patios, driveways, paths, walls, or windows, or fill and maintain paddling pools, swimming pools, and hot tubs. Watering cans, buckets, and water butts can still be used. And despite their unusually brown appearance, Oxford's famous lawns are likely to bounce back once the hot spell and hosepipe ban pass. In prolonged hot and dry weather, established grass can enter dormancy, slowing or stopping growth to protect the plant's crown and root system.
Students at Chuny School, Oxford, are to become tree guardians in collaboration with the Iris Project, a charity which promotes learning about the ancient world and supports the school's Rumble Museum. The students will monitor their tree's health and observe its biodiversity weekly. George Milne Day, tree planting officer from Oxfordshire County Council's Tree Service, visited the students in July to provide training on how to monitor tree health. Students looked at the sorts of things that can affect tree health, from fungus to the impact of climate. The Iris Project already has a tree trail created by Chuny School students, with carved wooden signs and wording written by students. Many of the trees have voices recorded by celebrities such as Monica Alley and Stephen Fry. Lorna Robinson is director of the Iris Project and author of the novel Hammer Dryad, which imagines a future with huge new national forests. She explains, "The idea behind this scheme is to encourage young people to feel connected to nature and create a lasting affection and sense of responsibility towards it."
New bus services have been planned to better connect Oxford to the south and west of the county, with significant timetable changes to be announced. Stagecoach has announced major enhancements to the bus services between Oxford and West Oxfordshire once the Botley Road, a key route into the city from the west, reopens. The Botley Road is currently set to be reopened to traffic after 3 years of full closure on September the 20th. After the original planned reopening date was pushed back by 3 weeks. The changes to the bus service network will include the new S1A and S1 services, providing up to 6 buses per hour between Whitney and Oxford via the A40. This will together equate to a bus available every 15 minutes between Oxford, Botley, Farmore, Ensham and Whitney, each with a service operating every 30 minutes. The S1 will continue beyond Whitney to Carterton, while the new S1A will serve the Downs Road Industrial Estate and the Windrush Estate before returning to Oxford. After the Botley Road reopens, the S6 will be extended to Gloucester Green Bus Station with a revised timetable to improve reliability, particularly during peak times. Plus, the S9 bus will provide new direct links from Wantage, Cumnor and Botley to the John Radcliffe Hospital. Martin Gibbon, Managing Director of Stagecoach West, said, "We've been looking carefully at how we can improve the network for our customers following the reopening of Botley Road, and these changes represent a significant enhancement to connectivity for our local communities. These changes will also make it easier for customers to connect across the wider network, take advantage of bus priority measures within Oxford, and benefit from the capped £3 fare. We know how important reliable, frequent, and straightforward bus services are to the communities we serve. These changes represent a significant investment in the corridor and are designed to make it easier for customers to connect with Oxford and across West Oxfordshire, helping them get to where they need to go." A host of other timetable changes include extending selected school day journeys on the S1 service to Burford for pupils at Burford School, and boosting the S2 to operate every 30 minutes between Carterton, Whitney and Oxford, cutting the Ensham Village stop, which will be served through the S1 and S1A buses. The S3 timetable will be adjusted to reflect customer demand, and journeys operating to Charlbury will be renamed the S3A to make it clearer where it stops. The S5 bus will return to stopping at all stops along the Banbury Road following a trial of limited stopping and will receive other changes to improve punctuality.
Thames Valley Police ticketed 16 Oxford drivers for using a mobile phone, 23 for seatbelt offences, and 5 for not being in proper control of a vehicle, in a single day operation on Thursday, the 6th of August. They also seized 2 untaxed vehicles and 1 uninsured, plus an illegal e-scooter. In total, TVP issued 55 tickets during the operation. One motorist was caught twice, 2 hours apart, using a mobile phone while driving. The patrol sardonically thanked all those who notified Google-owned app Waze of our location. We still got them.
Electrogenic, a Kidlington-based electric vehicle technology company, has acquired a Californian technology company. The British company has acquired Trometic Electric, meaning the company will have a permanent US base in Huntington Beach, California. The announcement does not disclose the financial terms of the agreement or any change in jobs to either company. In the announcement, Steve Drummond, chief executive of Electrogenic, described Trometic Electric GT as an exciting business underpinned by a talent and like-minded team. He added, "The USA is our most important market, and we wanted to provide additional support to our US partners, as well as establishing a strategic base in California as part of our ongoing SDV software development program." Drummond added that the deal would provide the company with a technical center of expertise on the USA West Coast, with the two firms now set to continue to explore future mutual opportunities in advanced technology and manufacturing. The Kidlington-based company now supplies electric-powered Land Rovers to the British Army. The company partners with others to restore and recreate beautiful classic cars, which then become electric-powered. Jason Momoa, Game of Thrones star, recently visited the site in Kidlington to convert 5 of his vintage vehicles to electric power. And this included 3 100-year-old Harley-Davidson motorcycles.
A major festival of classical music is marking its 25th anniversary with a special edition. The Oxford International Song Festival, the UK's largest festival dedicated to the art of classical song, will take place from October the 9th to the 24th and feature 59 events in celebration of its milestone year. Centred around the theme of love songs, the programme explores love in all its forms through music, poetry and conversation. More than 150 artists will perform works spanning 800 years, from medieval Armenian songs to romantic masterpieces and new commissions. Sholto Kainoch, artistic director of the Oxford International Song Festival, said, "When a small group of friends founded this festival in 2002, none of us imagined where the journey would lead. 25 years later, while the festival has grown enormously, its heart remains exactly the same. A passion for the extraordinary world of song and the friendships that it creates. Love lies at the heart of so much great song, and this year's festival explores its countless expressions, joyful, heartbreaking, transformative and unexpected." The festival opens with a recital by Dame Sarah Connolly and will also include performances by Matthias Goerner, Roderick Williams, Alice Coote and Benjamin Apel. 3 world premieres are scheduled, including works by John Webb, Khan Belir and the festival's associate composer, Emily Hazarati. Mr. Kainoch said, "As we celebrate this milestone anniversary, we also celebrate the wonderful community of artists, audiences and supporters who have shaped the festival over the past quarter of a century. Whether you're joining us for the first time or returning once again, we look forward to welcoming you to Oxford this October. The festival will be held in Oxford, including the newly opened Schwarzman Centre, which will host the opening concert. A special Schubert weekend will take place from October the 17th to the 18th, exploring the composer's life and work through immersive performances and discussions. Chamber concerts, poetry readings, and panel talks will also feature throughout the 16-day event. In keeping with its commitment to accessibility, the festival will offer thousands of tickets for £20 or less, with many of our events priced between £7 and £10. There will also be free events and £10 tickets available for anyone under 35. Full programme details and ticket bookings are available at www.oxfordsong.org. The box office can also be reached by phone on 01865 591276, Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
The owner of an iconic house with a 25-foot shark sticking out of its roof claims its Airbnb ban should be lifted. Mr. Marcus Hansen-Heine has marked the 40th anniversary of the unique home by urging planners to allow holidaymakers to enjoy it. The property in Headington, also known as the Shark House, was rented as an Airbnb for 5 years before Oxford City Council blocked it. Dr. Hansen-Heine's late father, Bill Heine, built the fiberglass sea creature without official planning permission 40 years ago. The American-born journalist and broadcaster had come to Oxford in the 1960s to study at Oxford University. The installation was opposed by the council, who stated it was dangerous, but engineers and inspectors pronounced it structurally safe. To preserve the shark, Bill's son, Magnus, bought the house in 2016, and it became a star attraction on Airbnb. Magnus was then told in March 2025 he must stop using the property as a short-term let, a move which he believes would hurt Oxford's tourism industry overall. To mark its 40th anniversary this week, Magnus now said he was still optimistic he could find a way forward for the public to enjoy it in the future. He said, "The previous planning inspector accepted that the shark house was an appropriate location for the use and found no evidence it had caused problems for neighbours or highway safety. The main obstacle was Oxford's general policy against the loss of a residential dwelling. With Oxford's new local plan going through independent examination, we've made representations asking for greater flexibility for genuinely acceptable properties such as the Shark House. If the planning position changes sufficiently, either through that process or through changes to the national rules, I would certainly look at applying again. I think there's a strong case for treating the Shark House a little differently from an ordinary rental property. It's obviously a house, but it's also one of Oxford's best known pieces of public art. When it was available on Airbnb, people could actually experience that extraordinary place from the inside and make it part of birthdays, reunions, visits to Oxford and other special occasions, rather than only ever seeing the shark from the pavement." Since the ban on the short-term rentals, the property has been listed for a longer-term rental at the cost of £4,000 a month. Its listing had stated, "Nestled in the heart of Headington at Oxford, the Headington Shark House isn't just accommodation. It's a dive into a piece of living art history." Magnus also said a screenplay adaptation had now been written of his father's book, The Hunting of the Shark, based around the true story of the shark's creation and the six-year battle that followed.
An Oxford housing project could restart 10 years after a huge explosion devastated a block of flats and left one man dead. Guido Chouette died in the blast at a block of flats in Gibbs Crescent, West Oxford, on Valentine's Day 2017. Part of the six-storey building was reduced to a flaming pile of rubble, after the explosion tore through numerous flats and rocked nearby buildings. Investigations found fuel stored in the flat of resident Mr. Chouette had ignited, and the 46-year-old died in what a coroner ruled was likely an accident. The property was full of car parts, and in the weeks prior, Mr. Chouette had been seen buying 80 litres of fuel, which was stored in jerry cans in the building. All 86 flats on site were later demolished after the explosion. Oxford City Council approved plans by developers to replace the site with 140 flats in a higher density six-story block. However, work to build new homes on the site stopped in 2023 when the construction company Henry Construction went into administration. Since then, little progress has been made at the site by Osney Marina and overlooking the River Thames. Developer A2 Dominion has said a deal with a new construction company called the Higgins Group is progressing. Finalised terms have not yet been agreed, but subject to ongoing negotiations, A2 Dominion is hoping construction work will begin early next year. Chris Ives, Managing Director of Development and Regeneration at A2 Dominion, said, "We are working with construction company Higgins Group to finalise a build price and programme and expect to be in a position to restart the development of 140 affordable homes in early 2027. It is expected that if everything goes to plan, work could take around 2 years from starting on site to completion. A total of 40 households were displaced following the fatal explosion." Susanna Pressel, City and County Councillor, said, "Local people will be delighted at the news because the site has been such an eyesore for almost 10 years and because they know that social housing is very badly needed. Also, the footpath through the site, which is an important through route, is really narrow and has been unpleasant since the work began. However, many local residents will also be dreading the period of construction. These residents have had to put up with enormous disruption from four major and many minor building sites over the past few years. Just when the major ones are drawing to a close, this new one will restart, bringing yet more HGVs into their narrow residential streets. We can't wait for it all to be over." Previously, Oxford University Professor Rhiannon Ash warned the site was at risk of becoming a socially deprived ghetto. At the time of the blast, Gibbs Crescent resident Gavin Long said, "It is the worst feeling in the world when you rush out and try to help someone, but there is simply nothing you can do. It was just horrendous. We saw the building just crash down and black smoke everywhere. I felt utterly hopeless."
An independent study has highlighted a glooming care home capacity gap in West Oxfordshire. The report by Care Home Guide predicts the district's population aged 85 and over is set to nearly double by 2043, increasing by 92.8%, presenting one of the fastest growth rates in England. This significant rise in the elderly population is projected to exacerbate an already concerning national trend. While the number of people aged 85 and over in England increased by 22.8% from 2011 to 2025, the growth in care home bed capacity lagged significantly behind at just 7.2%. Without new capacity, this gap is expected to widen sharply by 2043. Presently, England has approximately 306 care home beds for every 1,000 individuals aged 85 and over. However, if the number of beds does not increase, this figure is projected to decrease to 146 per thousand by 2043, a relative decline of 39% as the elderly population is expected to grow by 65% over the same period. This escalating gap comes after Care Home Guide found that bed capacity relative to the 85 plus population already decreased by 18% between 2011 and 2025.
An end was in sight for a dispute that halted the much anticipated introduction of new trains to Milton Keynes. Instead, strike action is on the cards. Oxford's new railway line to Milton Keynes has been complete for almost 2 years, but passenger trains still aren't running. A total of 45 drivers have been recruited for the new service, but no guards. A key crew member responsible for the safe, legal and smooth operation of a passenger train. This led to a long-running dispute between Chiltern Railways, who are in charge of the operation of the line, and the trade unions. In an attempt to settle the dispute, Chiltern Railways has started hiring customer service inspectors, roles that closely resemble the duties of traditional guards. The new inspectors, to be based at the Bletchley Depot, home to East-West Rail services, will undertake tasks including customer care, revenue protection, making on-train announcements, and reporting or rectifying faults. But unions have rejected this new role for a variety of reasons. Diana Lehmeyers, co-founder of East-West Rail Action Group, has said now the service will definitely not be open until December, as previously thought. She said, "There will now need to be negotiations and possibly strike action. Just because the train is on the timetable, sadly, that doesn't mean it'll run." In an email to her, Eddie Dempsey, the General Secretary of the National Union of Rail, Maritime and Transport Workers, RMT, called Chiltern Railways' proposed roles nothing more than an abhorrent attempt to undermine the safety-critical role of the guard. The email, dated Tuesday the 4th of August, spoke about the proposal in February this year to introduce customer service inspectors instead of guards. There were also proposals for West Midlands trains to carry out work at Winslow Station, part of Chiltern Railway's East-West Rail route, which the union are concerned about. Mr. Dempsey said the new role does not meet the expectations of the union, and the East-West Rail line must have a second safety-critical member of staff on board. He accused Chiltern Railways of blatantly attempting to level accusations against the union, when it is Chiltern's own failings that are causing these issues. Mr. Dempsey has written to Chiltern for urgent meetings, arranged mass meetings of the Chiltern Line branch, and is writing to local MPs to request that a motion is prepared on the matter. A letter will also be sent to the Department of Transport requesting that they reverse these plans.
Oxford's Migrant Hotel will continue to house asylum seekers as it is not included in the latest list of closures. Another 13 hotels housing asylum seekers have closed as Andy Burnham's government continues the process of moving people into alternative accommodation. Ministers are increasing their use of more basic sites, including former military barracks, having pledged to stop using asylum hotels completely by the next election. The 13 closures are expected to save taxpayers £51 million and brings the total number below 160, the Home Office said, having peaked at around 400 under the Conservatives. The list includes the Grade 2 listed building, the Grosvenor Hotel at Stratford-upon-Avon, and the Grand Metropole Hotel on the Blackpool Promenade, one of the two oldest hotels in the town. but Oxford's Holiday Inn Express by the Cassan Stadium in Grenoble Road is not included in this list. Seen to many protests, the hotel has housed asylum seekers for roughly 3.5 years, having first been engaged by the Home Office for this purpose around November 2022. Previously, the government has removed migrants from the Banbury House Hotel in Banbury and the Oxford Whitney Hotel in Whitney. Immigration Minister Anna Turley said, "For too long, communities have watched hotels in the centre of their towns and cities become symbols of a broken asylum system. We are turning that around by ending the use of asylum hotels for good and moving people into larger, basic accommodation like former military sites. This government's reforms are overhauling the immigration system to restore control at the border and fairness to our immigration system. Plans could include housing asylum seekers at former military bases, including near Bicester, where 1,250 could move in. There are approximately 400 to 550 asylum seekers officially housed in temporary Home Office, hotel and dispersal accommodations across Oxfordshire. Oxford City houses the highest concentration in the county, with around 222 people staying in designated temporary settings, which is shown by the latest figures. The Refugee Council's Imran Hussein said, "Hotels are often isolating for refugees, making it harder to access health and advice services. They're also costly and have become magnets for abuse and the far right." The issue of housing asylum seekers in a hotel has also sparked protests over the safety of women and girls.
The family of an organ donor met the recipient of their late loved one's liver at the Transplant Games on Saturday the 8th of August. They met before a donor run during the largest ever Westfield British Transplant Games, which were held in Sheffield. Liz Phillips, whose husband Rick Phillips died of a sudden brain aneurysm in 2020, and their daughter Jade were at the games on Saturday afternoon. Before the donor race in the evening, they met Steve Whelan from Oxford, whose life was saved when he received Mr. Phillips' liver in a transplant. They walked the race together in a tribute to Mr. Phillips. In its 48th year, the Games have brought more than 2,800 recipients, donors and donor families together. That includes 1,124 organ and stem cell transplanted athletes, 219 live donors and more than 1,500 of their supporters. Dr. Paul Harden, Chairman of Transport Active, said, "These record-breaking numbers demonstrate just how much these games mean to so many people, and it reflects the growing impact of the games and the transplant community across the UK. The event is a vehicle to showcase to the transplant community, and indeed those waiting for a transplant, the importance of leading a healthy lifestyle post-transplant and the life-changing impact it can have. We must not forget, however, that more people than ever are waiting for a transplant. When someone passes away, it will be their immediate family who need to provide consent as to whether their organs are donated. So it is crucial that as many people as possible have that conversation with their families about their desire to donate." The games run for 4 days, with swimming, football, track and field, bowling, tennis and archery among the competitions on offer. Participants compete for the hospital where they had their transplant. One competitor, Peter Nyland, 68, was diagnosed with liver disease in 2015 and given 2 years to live unless he lost enough weight to be deemed fit for a transplant. He weighed 24 stone at the time and needed to lose around 5 to be fit enough. 3 years later, he had lost more than 8 stone and received a transplant. Mr. Nyland has led a normal life since and continues to exercise regularly, winning medals in the British, European and World Transplant Games in archery, pétanque and bowling.
The Bishop of Dorchester has urged the community to stand together against hatred after figures show a rise in faith-related hate crime. Newly released data from Thames Valley Police shows recorded religious hate crime offences rose by more than a third in the last year, with 409 incidents logged between July 2025 and June 2026, up from 300 the year before. The Right Reverend Gavin Collins, who also serves as the acting Bishop of Oxford, said, "Hatred in any form, whether anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, racism or xenophobia, has no place in our society. This increase in reported hate crime is deeply concerning, and I encourage anyone who experiences or witnesses it to report it to the police." Bishop Gavin said that faith and civic leaders across the county were working closely together to respond. He said, "Through the Oxfordshire Faith and Communities Forum, which I co-chair with Imam Monwar Hussein, faith and civic leaders work together to build trust and stand together against hatred and those who seek to divide us. Our response must be to strengthen relationships, uphold the dignity of every person, and work for peace." Responding to the latest figures, Thames Valley Police said, "We recognise that the number of religiously motivated hate crime offences recorded across the Thames Valley has increased over the last year. A rise in reporting can reflect a number of factors, including greater awareness of what constitutes a hate crime and increased confidence among victims and witnesses in coming forward. Hate crime of any kind has no place in our communities, and we understand the significant impact these offences can have on victims, their families and wider communities." The force said it continues to work closely with local authorities, faith groups and other partners to understand concerns, support victims and prevent hate crime. It is also being supported by £250 million of government investments aimed at strengthening the response to anti-Semitism for police forces across England and Wales. The spokesperson added, "We would encourage anyone who experiences or witnesses a hate crime to report it to the police so we can investigate and ensure appropriate support is available." The figures have been published against the backdrop of a wider national concern around community tensions, hate crime and extremism.
The Congregation of St Mary's in Barton have moved back into their church, built in 1958 to serve the then new council housing estate, after a £1 million transformation intended to prepare the church for the next phase of its life whilst maintaining the iconic 1950s design. The original buildings have needed extensive repairs, while the loss of the church hall in 2017 had left them without a kitchen, office or community space. While the works were underway, the congregation decamped to Barton Neighbourhood Centre. Eric Heemskerk has been appointed as the new vicar to start in September. Services take place every Sunday at 10 a.m.
A golfing campaign group has slammed misleading statements in an Oxford University College's plans for a £900 million new research district as a consultation on proposals comes to an end. The Greenway Group is made up of members of the former North Oxford Golf Course, a 118-year-old club which was shut in 2025 to make way for over 1,000 homes. The group said it is appalled by the conduct of Exeter College as it plans more development on a farm earmarked for a replacement course. Oxford University, Merton College and Exeter College, the course owners, had come to an agreement with the club, offering them a £4.3 million deal to leave the site. Greenway had tried to stop the development plans but was not successful. And in the Cherwell District Council local plan, an alternative course site was proposed at Freeze Farm. Earlier this year, Exeter College submitted plans for a supercomputer innovation district, EXOQ, on the Greenbelt farm south of Kidlington, and Greenway describes the situation as a betrayal. Now it has gone further, alleging inaccuracy in proposals. Greenway spokesperson David Young said, "Exeter College's planning statement claims it never suggested or proposed that Freeze Farm was available to mitigate the redevelopment of the North Oxford Golf Course. He described this as simply not true, and in fact the college gave assurances that Freeze Farm could be used, if necessary, as a replacement site for the golf course." David said, "This is important as it was pivotal in the public inquiry decision to allow housing on the golf course. We expect more from Exeter than this." He said the statements mean the consultation was based on a wholly inaccurate picture, and without updating the plans, the college is allowing a flawed process to continue without immediate correction of fundamentally untrue elements. A spokesperson for Exeter responded saying, "The college accepts that some elements of the recent ECOQ planning statement do not accurately represent evidence in the prior local plan inquiry." They said, "The college has a wide range of consultations that are coming through, and we will draw these together and then make a single set of updates to the application and the environment statement as necessary at the appropriate time." The golfers group is also aggrieved by what it says are inaccurate statements, implying members were content to see their golf course closed. David said, "Again, this is not true. I do not know of any golfer who was content. The course had to close simply because college and university landlords refused to renew the lease." The college spokesperson responded, "Discussions with the club led to a proposal involving the payment of £4.3 million in return for vacant possession and a small strip of land owned by the club. While the landowners did not attend, we understand this proposal was put to golf club members at a general meeting who voted to accept it and vacate the site by a significant majority."
Oxford City Council is setting aside £0.85 million in a race to secure consultants in high demand for local government reorganisation. With Oxfordshire's council set to be reordered, according to the city's three councils plan, a report warns that, quote, "given the scale, complexity and compressed timescales associated with the design and implementation phase for Greater Oxford Council, existing officer capacity alone would not be sufficient to meet the programme requirements without additional specialist support," unquote. But with 20 other counties being reorganised at the same time, they say, quote, "there is urgency in moving ahead due to competition in the market for limited specialist consultancy resources," end quote. The deadline for the bids was the 13th of August.
Illegitimate vape shops in Oxford can hamper reputable convenience shops, an award-winning city shopkeeper has said. Kinari Patel, who runs Honeys of the High in Oxford City Centre with her husband, Hytem, has owned the High Street independent shop for 13 years now. Honeys of the High has won many industry awards, including News Agents of the Year and Home News Delivery of the Year at the 2026 FED Awards. It comes as Prime Minister Andy Burnham has pledged to give powers to council to say no to new vape shops in a bid to save Britain's hollowed-out high streets. Mrs. Patel said, "We're a reputable business. We've won a number of awards over the years. We like to make sure everything is correct, so we have the correct items, selling it to the correct people using an ID, for example. And then you see these other pop-ups that come, and they're selling illegitimate things. It does hamper our business, because people will come in and say, this is how much we can pay for it there. but they don't know what they're smoking at that price. She adds, there are so many vape shops around that it can be a front for something, selling items that are possibly not duty paid. These are all factors that hamper a reputable business like mine, Mrs. Patel added. In April, Shafulam Malikza was ordered by the court to pay £8,955 for selling illegal vapes at Matean Market in Holloway, Oxford. He saw the 32-unit packs of vape seized, which contained nicotine, containing liquid of up to five times the maximum permitted level. Mr. Burnham said, high streets across the UK have become unrecognisable over decades of decline. As he announced the changes, which would include scrapping the aim to permit rule. Retailers who want to set up such shops selling e-cigarettes will need to ask their local council for permission. Vape shops sit in a planning category known as Class E, a broad category covering shops, cafes and banks. By putting vape shops into their own sui generis category, on which the government will consult, it is thought every plan to set up a vape shop would need to go through the approvals process.
Another AI-generated local news publisher has surfaced. Future Business Media has launched Whitney News, Banbury Online and the Oxford Post, as well as numerous other sites covering Wokingham, Altrincham, Uxbridge, Market Harborough and many more. The content is AI summaries of council documents. It cites its sources as planning register and committee papers, licensing notices, police crime data, HM Land Registry sold prices, food hygiene ratings, Environment Agency flood warnings, and Gazette company filings. A publisher called Future Business Media on LinkedIn has a Dubai-based editor and co-founder. We reported in April on Oxford Daily and other AI-generated publications from the Times Intelligence Media Group, which recycle content from existing news sites and appear not to know the difference between Churchill, Oxford, and Churchill, Pennsylvania.
An Oxfordshire optician's has closed down just 4 years after a national chain took it on. Bayfield's Opticians and Audiologist shut down its Headington branch on London Road over the weekend of the 8th-9th of August. A statement on its website says, our Headington location is now permanently closed. Client care and records will transfer to our Tame branch. It's not clear whether staff at this branch have been made redundant or indeed why the Opticians has closed. Bayfields has not responded to the Oxford Mail's request for comment. Bayfields Opticians in Headington is understood to have begun operating under the Bayfields name in 2022 after Bayfields acquired the existing Robert Stanley Opticians business. Robert Stanley Opticians is an independent eye care provider founded in Oxfordshire in 1953. The 2022 acquisition involved Robert Stanley's practices in Abingdon, Bicester, Headington, Tame and Wallingford. Robert Stanley co-owner, Jerry Salmon, was the original founder Donald Salmon's son. Company's house records show that Bayfields Z Limited became the controlling company in March 2022 and the acquisition was publicly reported in June 2022. The Headington branch regularly enjoyed positive reviews, earning a 4.3 star rating on Google.
And that was the last item for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377 635. That's 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, our listener coordinator. You can also call the following mobile number, 07496062280. That's 07496062280. And leave your name and contact details as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous week's editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have an enjoyable week.